Hey guys, you are listening to the Small Accounting Podcast. Thank you for joining us. Today we delve into the second thing on the four priorities list that was prompted by a post that I made back at the beginning of October. Today we talk about the point of letting good entrance and exit routes control where your hunting locations are. That and probably an update and a little bit more on this episode of the Small Acre Hunting Podcast. You are listening to the Small Acre Hunting Podcast, the hunting podcast that is free of advertisements, bought and paid for opinions, and minutes of sponsorships. If that's what you want, there's a plethora of other podcasts out there. Here, we're going to talk openly, we're going to talk honestly, and we're going to live in the real world, free of sponsorships and paid for advertisements and opinions that are governed and dictated by them. That sounds interesting. Stay tuned for this episode of the Small Acre Hunting Podcast. All right, welcome to this episode of the Small Acre Hunting Podcast. I'm your host, Ty Miller, and if you're listening to this, you probably already knew that because you did not start. And I just want to extend a big welcome and a thank you, I guess. That's a two-part thing. First part, welcome to all the new listeners. Small Acre Hunting, it's funny. I do not have the time and the resources to develop and produce as much as I would like. I say that constantly, but it's true. So it means that much more to me that so many of you have reached out and just expressed how much you have enjoyed and appreciated my content that I have developed. You know, some of this stuff now is going on 3-4 years old, and guys are still messaging me about a podcast back in, 2021, where I talk about the potential is being there, a write-up from something. I just got an email about that the other day. The perfect property, the perfect property pyramid that we did last year. There's so many different things that I've done over the years, and it's just crazy to think. Actually, what was the one? Making a habitat plan, part 1, 2, and 3. I think there was a fourth one, but somebody just messaged me about that, and that was all the way back into 2020, so 3 years old. Just welcome. Thank you. You are an encouragement. Today, especially, got an email from a gentleman named Tim. You know who you are. Just meant the world to me, your comments and such. So just appreciate each and every one of you. And the thank you, I guess I have to say, to Don Higgins and Terry Peer, dear friends of mine. It's humbled. I can still remember I was sitting at work one day and my phone just started blowing up with alerts and new follows and subscriptions and such. And it was like, what is going on? Well, then lo and behold, I think it was Pops or somebody messaged me. He's like, did you know that they brought you up on Chasing Giants podcast? So it was a little surreal moment, but whatever. I am literally a Joe Schmo from Northern Indiana, if you don't already know, but it means a lot that good people out there recognize good people and genuine, and I try to do that. I don't always accomplish it, but that's always my goal every morning that I wake up. But enough rambling on my part. We're going to get into the number two, but I know some people have been asking for a quick update. I have not been able to hunt as much as I would like to. I've actually only hunted my personal place 3 times this year, have not been able to make it out, but I did get out there this last week. I actually was 3/4 of the way to a property that we have permission to hunt. I had hunted there twice already, Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday. I was like, well, I'm going to go. The morning had really, really light winds, so I didn't want to blow up anything. Nothing felt great right now. And I was like, I'm not going to go push in and know that I'm going to have to climb down the second thermal stop. So I was like, you know what? No wind, no hunt. So I didn't go. And then Saturday afternoon, I was like, you know, I'm going to head to the place I've been going. I'm going to maybe try a different place, maybe sit on the ground or something. And I got about 20 minutes into that drive, and I just stopped the truck, turned, and I headed to my place. And I sat at the base of some food, a connecting trail between two food sources that I have, two small, maybe third of an acre, half an acre at most, each of those plots, and then there's a trail that connects, and I'm literally sitting in the middle of them. I can see to the one, I can shoot to the other, and I can shoot to the plot trail that connects them. I hadn't even got my bow situated and set up. I didn't even have I didn't have my black long sleeve shirt on over everything like I like to do. And here comes a really nice 2-year-old 7-pointer. I don't know if he was a 7-pointer clean or if he was a busted 8-7, but great buck. He's going to be tempting next year, depending if he blows up. But I'm hoping I don't get a chance at him until 2025 when he's a 4-year-old. But just awesome that he came through. I saw a bunch of other deer, a few other bucks seeking. A lot of the young bucks were pushing and bumping some stuff. I heard something at closing light. Never laid eyes on it. No clue what it was. But my year has been kind of uneventful. I could have put some deer in the freezer. Just didn't like the situation or wasn't at a spot where I like to take a doe this time of year, or like to take a doe in general. If I'm still buck hunting, and honestly, there's a few stands that I will probably never shoot a doe out of unless I got a gun, and I'm hoping to drop them right then and there. Sorry, needed a drink. But that's kind of the update on my season. Pops hasn't really hunted a ton either, so there's not a bunch to report. Neither of us have laid eyes on a deer in person that we would shoot. That's probably going to change here coming up. So I'm hoping to get out as much as possible. Hopefully you've been able to find some time, and if not, hopefully proper priorities have kept you away from them, because, you know, in the end, hunting should not be something that's overriding a lot of the rest of our lives. But I know if you're like me, you fall victim to that every now and then. But on today's episode, we are going to be talking again about the post that I made on October 2nd, and I'm just going to read kind of the summary of it. Not every property can be held to the same standards. Each property has a unique set of factors which should cause a landowner to raise or lower their expectations and ultimately lead them to decide, is the juice worth the squeeze? I'm going to stop right there for a second, because a lot of the people that write me, you know, they get discouraged with small properties. The reason why the majority of people hire me or reach out to me is either they don't know how to handle a small property, or they feel like it's just not quite big enough, and they're hoping I'm going to be able to work some kind of miracle. And they worry about whether the juice is worth the squeeze, in essence. And I'm here to tell you, yes, within reason, but you got to be willing to adjust your expectations at times. And it becomes crucial for small properties. But let me continue on, because more on that later. Continuing on, for smaller parcel owners, this is even more crucial to determine, meaning adjusting your expectations and knowing where to set your goals. If you limited me to 4 main points I think every smaller property owner should prioritize, I'd be hard-pressed to find a property which I wouldn't prioritize these 4 things on. Now remember, some of these points can be expanded upon and could yield to an entire discussion around, which may just have to happen, and that's what's occurring. This is one portion of it. I do want to, in the off-season, unpack and discuss how each of these things may look. Today, we're going to tackle just unpacking the topic in general and in itself, and maybe speaking some generalities. However, I have some great ideas on how to visualize this. I'm going to provide maybe even some video content to go along with the discussion of some of these things. But let's tackle number 2, because we already talked about be realistic in your goals and expectations. That was the last episode that you listened to, if you're listening to these in order. On this one, we're going to talk about letting good entrance and exit routes control where your hunting locations are. So I hesitate to say that there's nothing else that can ruin a property quite like a bad entrance and exit, because then you're always going to run into just habitual trespassing by a neighbor or some just crazy off the wall, atypical thing, an easement cutting right through the property that gets used every single day. Like, things can be larger factors than a bad entrance and exit route. However, when it comes to actual hunting, I do believe that a bad entrance and exit route is the number one reason why you should not hunt a place, hunt a spot. And I've kicked this can so many times, but I'm going to tell you, I still to this day, I'm actually going to take it down this off season, or I'm going to think some off the wall approach to get to it. I have a stand that is in by far a place that I want to hunt more than anywhere else on my property. But I can't get to it and justify getting to it. It's just not intelligent to do. But I know if I could dig a tunnel to it, or if I could be dropped in with a drone or zip line to that tree from really far away, I would kill probably every single mature buck if I got enough sits in there at my place. Give me 2, 3, or 4 sits and I will kill one of the top 2 bucks most likely at my property. Like, that's how confident in that location I am. But I don't hunt it because I have to let good entrance and exit routes control where my hunting locations are. Because, you see, by disregarding how we're getting to and from our hunting locations, directly influences and correlates to how safe our property feels. I've spoken in time and time again, and I think I even did a podcast on this, or I know I did a video, but like the story that we leave behind. Every single time that you step foot on your property, or you ride a quad on your property, or you ride a bike on your property, or drive a vehicle or a tractor, you are leaving a story behind for the deer to interpret, for them to try to figure out what it was, what it was up to. Is it a threat? Is it not a threat? Is it old? Is it new? Is it something I should be scared of? And they have to kind of interpret that. You know, it's incredible. A tractor, deer do not associate with danger. Most deer in agricultural type settings, a tractor does not do anything to them. The other night I was leaving and crossing a bean field, and because of the glow of the tractor lights and such, when the tractor or the combine turned around at the other end of the field, there was literally 2 deer, and I know where they were and I know where the tractor was. They were probably 30 yards apart. And those 2 deer, didn't one of them put its head back down to keep eating halfway through the turn of the tractor with them between the lights and me. So I had a great silhouette shot of these deer. They did not care. Did not care. They've learned and been conditioned on what that item is. They don't always necessarily know how to interpret, you know, a quad or, the faint scent of a human but with no tracks. That almost might creep them out more. Who knows? You know, human foot traffic. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it a predator? Are they hunting me? Are they trying to kill me? Are they not? How fresh is this? Should I be worried about my entrance into my bedding area because I have to cut this trail? I'm uneasy with this. I'm going to turn around. And if that happens time and time again, well, now you're beginning to condition deer. They are like a responsive alarm. You know, they don't proactively think in the same fashion we do because they can't, they don't have the ability to, if a deer could think like us, we'd never kill them. But they don't. They're very reactionary based. Now, their senses are crazy high, especially as they get older and they mature. But they are a reactive animal. But the more you cause them to react, just like a dog, Pavlov's dog, every time you ring the bell, the dog salivates because it was conditioned to know that when the bell rang, there was going to be food. Same with a deer. You get them, you bump them enough times, or you deliver scent to them enough times, they begin to associate that area with danger possibly. And time again, I see landowners unwilling to give up certain stand locations, and they do so at the cost of their hunting. If their property could be a 10 out of 10, poor entrance and exit is going to make that property hunt like a 7 or 6 out of 10 property. It just is. You cannot. You know, my dad is learning this. Pops is learning it, you know, because we were in a rush. Logging happened this year. They did put in a plot in the biggest location that he could. We had no ability to prep an entrance and exit, so he's literally walking in on the one logging trail. It's towards the center of his property. We've made no potential tunneling effect for entrance and exit, so he's not walking where the deer are going to walk. We're not hunting the edges of this and going into the middle sparingly. And he's not seeing deer like the cameras were indicating. Well, I mean, and we know why. We're not ignorant to the fact of knowing why. And there's a lot of adjustments we're going to make. But bad entrance and exits has kind of hit the pause button or slowed down or turned the dial towards the negative a little bit, even at the river bottom property for Pops. And we're going to correct that. We're going to get this fixed. And I still think he's got a really good chance of killing a really good buck out there. I do too. If I go out there, I have full confidence in, I especially like the one northern stand that we hung. It's closer to the road, as long as you put up with traffic from the road and such. The entrance and exit is much better. And we're going to make it even better by cutting some tunnels to it and such. And making sure that we discourage any cross traffic to where we're not asking a deer to walk across our trail. I'm even trying to make one of my entrance and exits to a blind that I have be even better because deer are still slipping between me and the road. So I'm already thinking about, is there a way that we could bump the blind down 5 to 10 yards, elongate the plot along the west side, hinge cut behind me and blockade some traffic to where if deer are going to have to travel between me and the road, they're going to have to do it almost out on the road. I'm going to give them cover, but they're going to have to do it about 10 yards from the road. And that would be about 40 yards from me. Just getting them beyond that immediate area. And now that's a small property. It's not ideal that I'm going to have those deer do that. I'm going to discourage it enough to where I think it's going to be only in the cover of darkness will they do it. And I'm actually going to try to bump them north of the blind, but not into the plot. I'm going to give them cover to walk through. Even if it cuts 10 yards in front of the blind, that's fine because I'm never going to be there unless I have good wind, because then I have a good entrance and exit. And I can get into that blind without asking the deer to cross my scent or my trail, if at all possible. Now, I can't control where deer go, but I can control where I go and where I don't go and where my entrance and exits are. Oftentimes, a property can change in one season if we just change how we hunt it. If we learn to hunt it better. If we learn to give up some places that possibly are some of the best places on our property from a locationary, you know, grading. Like, that location is dynamite. Yes, that location is dynamite, but getting to it destroys a lot of the positive of my property. And when you have a smaller property, you don't have the room for error that larger property and parcel owners do. You just don't, guys. We do not have the footprint of a property that can withstand those types of mistakes. Because you may only have 10 acres, 7 acres, 17, 23. Like me, I don't even have 23. Just under 23. I can't afford to make those mistakes. And when I have, I've seen it play out on my properties and it hasn't been good. So we got to learn to make our good entrance and exit routes control where we put our hunting locations. And then if we can, at all possible, begin to think, how can we manipulate our habitat? How can we manipulate the land potentially if we have the ability to do so? Is there a way that we can make or change a location to where maybe it's, man, you know what? I'm just not comfortable with that entrance and exit. Okay, what could we do to make it better? What could we do to justify it? Would hinging a blockade work? Would planting a screening work? Would a bunch of... I was going to say deadfalls, but that's not the word I was looking for. Would a bunch of treetops pushed, similar to a hinge cut, but maybe you're not a hinge cut fan. Okay, we're going to knock over some trees. We're going to create a dead wall, in other words. Is there a way that maybe we move some food? We get rid of some food, but we make, you know, we're going to get rid of this final 30, 40 yards of this food plot and let just herbaceous vegetation grow up. Or maybe we're going to discourage good food in there. Maybe we're just going to throw a little bit of switch in it. It's too small of a location for a lot of bedding to occur. But it removes some of the food from the base of this food plot. And maybe now I can get into that stand that's near the base of this food plot and be able to hunt it. Like, all these things are options. We have to begin to unfold and unpack and analyze. Okay, man, it'd be really nice to hunt over there. Or every time I hunt there, I'm blowing deer out on this location. Why? What is something I can, is there anything I can do? And you know what? If the answer is no, then I've got to figure out a way to hunt differently at a different location, but hopefully hunt the same area. Is there a way that I can still hunt the same movement of this? Like, this location is hunting deer going from this oak flat and this bedding area in between them. But I'm set up, maybe I can't enter here closer to the bedding area. But what if I can enter down here towards the oaks because I've got a cover of a hillside and there's a couple deadfalls that I could hinge around. And now I can come in on the backside of that, slip in. And yeah, time-wise, them getting to the oaks might be a little rougher, but maybe morning stand, I could sit there if I can get in and up while they're still at the oaks. I can get them while they come back. And now I'm hunting the same movement without sacrificing a bad entrance and exit and just justifying it because it's a good location. These are things that you've got to be willing to do in order to make your property better. And all of this is going to lead into the next two points. And I look forward to unpacking those because I'm telling you, those are probably two of the most passionate ones that I have, especially the last one. And it's really hard to tackle and explain because it's a lot of little things that add up. But we're going to be talking about creating daytime security and then security, not cover. So stay tuned for the next episode. Hopefully it'll be sooner than this one took. But today we talked about good entrance and exit routes. Let them control where your hunting locations are. Do not let your hunting locations control where your entrance and exits are. Your entrance and exit should come first. Or if you're like, I want to hunt that location, you have to be willing to say nope if you can't get a good entrance and exit leading to it. That's why I like to say I can enter. I got good entrance and exits here. And it progressively gets worse the farther I get from this location, which means I got to back up and hunt this area. I've rambled on long enough. Keep this in mind. You've probably been reflecting and thinking of a couple of stands that you probably already have that you're like, you know what? Ty's right. I probably am doing more damage than good. Now, I will say, in closing, sometimes the juice is worth the squeeze. So sometimes maybe having that stand that is a risky entrance and exit, depending where it's at, if it's near bedding, save it for that one time a year where you're like, you know what, I'm going to take some 5-hour energy, I'm going to take a pee jug, I'm going to get some food, I'm going to go up this tree, I'm going to stay all day. Because the wind is good once I get there. Maybe I'm going to put an estrus drag down to try to cover up some of my ground scent. I'm going to get to that tree, I'm going to get up it hour before light, and I'm just going to sit there. Sometimes it's worth it. And that'd be the only way I would hunt a stand that doesn't have a great entrance and exit. It'd be reserved for that like one time a year. The problem is, though, too many of you do one times a year 12 times, or you do 12 one-time sits at 12 different locations on your property and you destroyed it. Don't do that. Keep all this in mind. God bless everyone. If you enjoy content like this that is ad-free, sponsorship-free, the least you can do is spread it. Give the Small Acre Hunting a review on whatever platform you have. Share it with your friends. If you want to help me out, you can go to Patreon, become a Patreon of all Small Acre Hunting things. Just a small little way to show that you support this concept and this idea of content that is free of biasness. essentially. So that's all. I'm Ty. God bless and good luck out there.